Thank you, George. My name is Doug Jost. I'm a technology development rep for Monsanto, and I'm going to be talking about our performance of our Delta Pine cotton varieties based on water use efficiency. Our overall objective of this study has been to characterize our water response of our new Delta Pine, our Monsanto varieties, in hopes of more effectively positioning these varieties with growers based on water utilization. Unlike George's presentation, where we're talking about using an app to schedule amounts of irrigation, we're kind of set with a different scenario out in West Texas. We're dealing with such limited rainfall and harsh environments out there that oftentimes we just can't get the cotton out of the ground. So in 2013, we had started out with eight testing locations, ranging from up here in Edmondson and Olton with Bob Glott with AgriSearch, over here in Lubbock with Dr. Glenn Ritchie with Texas Tech University. We had a location over here in Lorenzo, right here, an internal Monsanto location. We had a couple of locations over in La Mesa with Dr. Wayne Keeling. One was on a pivot and one was on a drip irrigation site. And then down as we went further down south into the St. Lawrence area and then finally in that Reagan County area. So we're trying to cover as many locations as possible within West Texas to look at different soil types, different irrigation types, just kind of spread our risk a little bit. Unfortunately, we lost three of these sites. The first one in La Mesa was lost because we just simply couldn't get a good stand. Dr. Keeling just, with just lack of rainfall, couldn't get a good stand early in the season, so we lost that site on the drip irrigation. Over in Edmondson, after it came up, we got a rainfall event, but of course it came with hail, so we lost that site due to hail. And then down in Reagan County, we took it all the way to harvest, and we had an ice storm and lost it. Most of the cotton got on the ground. So just to reiterate, we're dealing with harsh environments, not only on limited water, but other things that we have to deal with. So this presentation is going to be focused on a combination of data from these five sites. In the way we set these up, we began these trials back in 2006. Monsanto wanted to get a good feel for the way these cotton varieties were performing and just try to better position these varieties. So back in 2006, we started looking at different ways that we could kind of look at our experimentals and better position those varieties. We focus our research on both drip irrigation and on pivot irrigation. We look at experimental varieties at least 2 years prior to commercialization. That's our goal. This year's data, the data I'm presenting today, is based off of only 1 year's data. So this is preliminary data. We don't have all the ginning data in yet, so the stats aren't there yet. So it's just a snapshot of what we've seen this year. But we then compare those to some of our commercial checks within these sites. We typically look at 8 to 12 varieties per location, replicated 3 to 4 times. In trying to build this data set, we're looking at 4 different irrigation levels: a minimum, or a dryland, or limited type of irrigation treatment, a 30, 60, and 90% ET replacement, evaporative demand replacement. We have weather stations located at each one of these sites to help us in triggering when these irrigations should take place and how much we're actually going to water. I would like to mention, though, on the limited or dryland treatment, it's actually called a dryland treatment or a limited treatment, but all of these water treatments are treated exactly the same until first square. So they all have a preseason water and they have some moisture to at least get them up and going. Otherwise, we would most of the time not have a treatment number 4, that limited water treatment. After that first square, all the water treatments are then separated based off of ET. Basically, when we calculate our ET, we're looking at several different components, much like George just mentioned in his previous presentation. We're looking at our irrigation method. In this case, again, it'd be drip or pivot irrigation, and the system's efficiency based off of that. We're looking at our cotton growth stage. So in this case, if we're in pre-bloom, first bloom, full bloom, so on and so forth, because those numbers do change based off of that. And finally, our accumulated ET number, based off our weather stations at each of these locations. That then gives us a number to calculate. We can estimate then 100% ET at that point, and then calculate down on 90, 60, and 30% ET. This gives us the exact amount to water at a certain time, so it's a very scripted irrigation method to try to get the results that we're looking for. We're also collecting our agronomic parameters in plant mapping. This is just end of season full plant mapping, looking at plant height, node to first fruiting branch, so on and so forth. What this does is it gives us information on how these varieties are going to perform in different environments based on the amount of water they've got. We found that some of the varieties actually become a little more indeterminate as you move them south, even though when we tested them earlier, they seemed to be very determinate in our northern territory. So it gives us information, again, to better position these varieties with growers. I want to reiterate again, this is preliminary data, only 1 year's worth of data from these five sites. But what we're going to look at is combined location analysis for this data, plant growth and maturity response, as well as yield response. So starting out in our overall impact on maturity based off of water, what we have here is five of our varieties listed, and I listed these varieties based off of maturity. So the first variety there, the Delta Pine 1410, is the earliest maturing variety. Just those of you who may not be familiar with our numbering system, the first two numbers indicate the year that the variety was introduced. The third number indicates a maturity group, so a 0 would be very early, and a 5 would be the fullest season we have. So a 1410 would be an earlier maturing variety. And you can see in the limited water here, these varieties stack up just about like we think they would based off of maturity on limited water. You see the 1410 coming in the earliest maturing, followed by 1321, finally 1044, and then the 1441 and 1454. Excuse me. As we move to the 30% ET, what we see is 1321 acting a little bit longer season, not much, but just maturing just a hair later. We've noticed that this is the third year of data for 1321 for us. We've noticed that as you move it south in our territory, it does act a little bit more longer season, especially if it's planted a little bit later as you give it more water. So doing quite well in those areas based off of that. You can see the longer season variety jumping up there, taking a little bit more time, even with 30% water, 30% ET to mature out. And then finally, as you continue to add water, you can see how some of these, even the 1410, earlier maturing variety, is actually staying in there, hanging in there. One thing I want to point out before I move on to the next graph is noticing the 1410, how even though it's maturing early in this limited water, in these limited water scenarios, it's actually going to out-yield some of those, some of the other varieties in these locations. So it's setting its fruit quickly. It's holding on the fruit that it's got, and actually doing quite well in this scenario, even though it's maturing a little bit earlier. So in yield results, I'm going to talk a little bit about percent lint in gallons per minute per acre. Again, we're not through we're through ginning. We don't have our HBI data back, so I don't have a complete data set here yet. To set this up, basically we're going to present this in we show this to try to simplify the process for a grower. So if a grower understands that he's got so many gallons per minute capability of pumping at his well capacity, for example, let's say he's got 200 gallons per minute, he would look on a chart like this and then run it across, and let's say he's trying to cover 120 acres, then he's got a 1.7 gallons per minute per acre irrigation capability. So we set these up in gallons per minute per acre. So we have less than 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and greater than 4 gallons per minute per acre. This is looking at percent lint yield. I'm looking at Lubbock North. So if you look at this circle up here, Lubbock County is located on the southern end of this circle. So these are the shorter season varieties that we would typically place north of Lubbock. The 1212, Delta Pine 1212, I'll start with it. It had an excellent year this year, this past year, north of Lubbock. Did very well, and you can see based even off of this information, this is three combined sites from Lubbock, Edmondson, and Lorenzo, that the 1212 did quite well. But at the lower end of the less than 2 inches per acre, 2 gallons per minute per acre, We've got 1410 doing quite well there, actually surpassing our 1321, which has done very well in the last couple of years in these trials. What 1410 does bring in addition over the 1212, for example, is ease in management, just like 1212. We've got better storm proofness, and we're getting a higher quality as far as our overall length of fiber. So it's bringing more to the table than just this water efficiency in this particular case. As you move to 2 to 3 gallons per minute per acre, giving a little bit more water in those scenarios, the 1212 doing quite well, but the 1410 hanging in there. And then as you can see, as you get more water, how these line up then. So again, preliminary data, but just trying to look at these trends. As we move south of Lubbock into the longer season varieties, the way I line these up is based off of when they were introduced. So Delta Pine 1044, introduced in 2010. It's been our standby limited water variety south of Lubbock. It's done very, very well. We've come back then with 1321, a little bit shorter season variety, but still hanging in there very well as you go into different water amounts within each one of these scenarios. I want to add 1410. Now again, we're going a little bit shorter season, and I was a little concerned that, okay, are we getting too short of a season variety as we continue to go south? So I pulled up the St. Lawrence location just to look at one location and make that comparison, and you can see that these varieties stacked up from a yield perspective exactly like they are on this graph with combined data. So that made me feel a little better. That particular trial was planted at the end of May, not too late, about normal for us. So the 1410 hung in there very, very well. It's exciting to see some of these new varieties do this well, especially at these low water ends for us in West Texas, when 60% of the acres are dry land and the remaining 40% are very limited water. You know, this information becomes pretty important. Finally, as we add our additional two new varieties, 1441 and 1454, you can see how they line up as well. They don't do quite as well at the low water end, and as you increase the water, they kind of hang in there, but just not doing quite as well as maybe the 1410, the 1044, and the 1321 have been doing based on this limited data set. One thing I want to point out, our longest season variety here, 1454, is a nematode-resistant variety. All of these sites were in areas where we had no nematode pressure. So in a situation where we had nematode pressure, I would expect these red bars to increase and these other bars to decrease. But one thing I want to point out here, the 1454 is in yield parity with our 1044, which is one of our better varieties in the marketplace right now south of Lubbock. So we're still hanging in there where we need to be, but again, no nematode pressure there. So finally, in conclusion, I just want to point out that we've been testing this since, again, 2006. We've looked at a lot of varieties since then. We continue to test these, trying to better position these based off of water. I would like to acknowledge again Bob Glott and Alan Stallings from AgriSearch over in Edmondson Olton out of that Plainview office. We really appreciate their help. They've been working with us for many years. Dr. Wayne Keeling as well. Wayne's been invaluable in what we've learned from him in this project. Dr. Glenn Ritchie, again, at Texas Tech University, we appreciate all your help. And then those internal cooperators from Monsanto who've helped not only conduct the trial, but in doing the data analysis. So with that, I'm out of time. If there's...
Our next speaker has canceled. He's ill, so there's plenty of time to...
Well, gosh, I wish you'd told me that sooner. I would have slowed down a little bit. Yes.
Have you done any preliminary or past economic data as far as the dollar figures?
Yes. Absolutely. That's typically how we present the data. This year, we're just looking at lint. Yes, what we typically do is once we get our HBI data back, we look at the overall inputs from yield, HBI, get our loan value, and then we take into account what it costs to irrigate per acre inch. So we're assuming $15 per acre inch out in West Texas is our cost. We then combine all those numbers together and we get what we call a net value. And that net value is then compared to the inches of water. And so our graphs Our bar graphs typically change slightly based off of quality. So if for example, at the St. Lawrence location, I only irrigated 10 inches on a limited water, I mean on a 30% ET, that 10 times 15 would be $150 that's taken off of that. But at my counterparts up in Lorenzo may have irrigated more, so their value is taken out of that as well. So yes, actually all data presented up to today has been at net value. Any other questions? Yes, Craig.
Craig, excuse me, before you ask your question, let me tell everybody that the next paper, which was canceled, of course, allows for some discussion time, but please be back at 8:45 for the paper that begins then. So don't abandon the session, please. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Craig.
So you're testing your varieties based on percentage of replacement, then you summarize it by gallon per minute per acre?
Yes. Okay, so we do a conversion basically. When we're looking at percent ET, we know based off of each of these locations exactly how much water they received for that 30, 60, and 90% ET. We can then go back and basically convert it into gallons per minute per acre. In a case, let's say for example, one location may have had a 45% ET target, then we've got to line up exactly where that data would line up on that graph instead of on a 30% ET. So then you can easily bucket into less than 2 inches, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and greater than 5, or greater than 4 in this case. We've actually, our marketing group is actually working on a program where you can set all that data on a single graph and you can hover over a data point and it'll actually show you what variety it is and how it lined up. So if you're wondering about on the ET end of it, it shows it all in one slide, so you can hover over any data point and see how that variety did based off of the amount of water compared to all the other varieties. It's something we're working on. It's not quite finished yet, but I think it's going to be a pretty intuitive tool that will kind of take that mystery out of it. I know when you talk about ET, it gets a little confusing sometimes, so that's why we try to convert that over to overall inches. Yes. It kind of normalizes it back into what you're really trying to look at. Billy?
I call them the dry land or the, I call it dry land. Uh-huh. You said you had to put out water to fill first. Or how much water, I know where you're talking about how dry we are. How much
right.
Water do you think you put out to that
first? Well,
6, 7 inches?
You know, what's interesting is we'll pre-water. Obviously, we always got to pre-water. And a lot of times it's about 6 inches is what we put out this year. And many times if you're planting, and I know on my trial, and I think Wayne does the same thing, we got to make sure we have enough moisture to get that plant up. And usually after that, I don't put on any more water, even up to first square. It pretty well hangs in by itself. You can watch the ET calculator at that point, and when that cotton's just coming up, it doesn't require much per day. And as long as it doesn't look stressed and you know, the environment's good, it's not too hot that time of year, we leave it alone.
So basically, you're just getting it up.
It's
not water to water.
Right. Now, sometimes, I know Dr. Ritchie's Glenn in here. He had to water prior to that first square. I think he watered right up to first square, and then he caught a rainfall event. So, you know, it his dry land or limited water data actually turned out to be doing pretty well. So that's why we have to go back and, like Craig mentioned, we go back and we put them into the less than 2 inches and try to renormalize that data from that perspective. Okay, anyone else?
Dr. 41 is Black Tunnel.
Yes.
Have any barn price to recur?
No, yeah, that would affect that. The question was on the 1441 Roundup Ready Flex, was there worm pressure that may have skewed that? There wasn't at my site. I think we had pretty limited worm pressure. Wayne, did you see nothing at La Mesa? Eric, Lorenzo, I don't think we had anything that was, Jorge, you know, over in Lubbock, Glenn's? Okay. So no, I don't think we had an effect there. Okay, thank you.